You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. Next, we're going to be moving on to the UK. MI5, their intelligence wing, basically was slapped on the wrist for a serious surveillance data breach. Home Secretary Sajid Javid has basically told Parliament that the MI5 screwed up the security of certain technology environments used to store and analyze data, including that of ordinary Britons. Now, in a lengthy parliamentary statement made last week, Javid basically admitted that the spies allowed more people to help themselves to the databases on British citizens that was legally allowed. And so if you are a citizen of the UK, heads up, your information may have been disclosed by your intelligence wing. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Last week, they notified patients after a phishing attack on an employee's email account. Now, this employee works at the Southeastern Regional Medical Center, and this attack took place on March 10th, 2019, and the attacker was potentially able to gain access to the account between March 10th and March 11th. The investigation did not confirm whether personal health information had actually been accessed, and so Cancer Treatment Centers of America is notifying all those that are potentially affected, and the precise number was not mentioned in the letter that they sent out. So if you have anything to do with the Cancer Treatment Centers of America and you get a letter, you might want to contact them. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Instagram, a database containing the contact information for what was originally thought to be millions of Instagram influencers was reportedly found online, exposing info like phone numbers and email addresses of celebrities, quote unquote, influencers and brand accounts. Now, according to TechCrunch, the database was hosted on an Amazon Web Services server and left without a password, meaning anybody could just go and look at it. Original reports claimed that it contained as many as 49 million records, but Instagram has since confirmed that the database contained records for about 350,000 accounts. So celebrities and quote-unquote influencers, those with like a zillion followers on Instagram, pretty much just had their information out there. And if you are using Instagram, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Google. So Google is saying some of their G Suite user passwords were stored in plain text since 2005. Now, I mentioned Facebook in this exact same situation a few weeks ago, but G Suite is basically the corporate version of this. So let's say you're running a business and you're using Google services, Google for Business, you are a G Suite member. And some of these accounts, especially on the enterprise side, have been stored in plain text, meaning anybody, including Google employees, could simply read the password. It was not protected or encrypted. That's a very serious issue. Now, Google disclosed that the exposure basically 2 weeks ago on Tuesday, but declined to say exactly how many enterprise customers were affected. And I quote from Google, "We recently notified a subset of our enterprise G Suite customers that some passwords were stored in our encrypted internal systems unhashed," meaning able to be read by anybody else. So if you are on G Suite and you work for an enterprise, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a seriously damning breach by First American Financial Corp. And I've also learned since then that a class action lawsuit is going on as a result of this. They just leaked hundreds of millions of title insurance records. The website for this Fortune 500 real estate title insurance basically leaked all of this, including mortgage deals going back to 2003, and it literally just started publicly disclosing this. Now, these digitized records include bank account numbers, statements, mortgages, tax records, social security numbers, wire transaction receipts, driver's license images, and these were all available without authentication for basically anybody to download with a web browser. So if you've ever done a mortgage with First American Financial, and that is literally hundreds of millions of you out there, heads up, you might be seriously, seriously exposed. Moving on, we're heading to Australia. Now, there's a company there called Canva. They are a web design online service that is used worldwide, including in the United States, and they seem to have been hit by a malicious hacker who claims to have made off with data pertaining to 139 million users worldwide. Obviously, the population of Australia is something like 30 million, 40 million. So this is literally a global issue. Now, this personal information that was stolen includes real names, usernames, email addresses, and city and country information. Now, on the bright side, email passwords were basically properly hashed using encryption. So those are fairly well protected. And dates of birth and street addresses do not seem to have been part of this compromised data. But if you use Canva for web design, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about the Schubert Organization. They own 17 Broadway theaters, and they also own the ticketing service Telecharge. Now, according to a letter they mailed to some of their customers, Schubert executives came across some suspicious activity on an employee's email account last February and teamed up with some forensic experts to investigate what was happening. This probe found that somebody had gained access to several employee email accounts, which had customer names, credit card numbers, credit card expiration dates. However, it's unclear whether or not the intruder actually accessed the information. And it would seem logical that they would, if you're talking about this, but here we are. So with that, we will keep moving on. IT services giant HCL, they are one of the major players in IT services, left their employee passwords exposed online, as well as customer project details and other sensitive information, all without any form of authentication. Research by security consultants at UpGuard found this open database. Now, HCL's human resources portal published basically the employee names, usernames, and clear text passwords. And so HCL, which is a massive IT company, is probably selling security, wasn't really securing themselves. So guys, step up your game there. From there, we are heading back to India. Now, if you are a Truecaller user, you might have a thing or two to worry about. Personal data from millions of Truecaller users, including multiple or millions of Indian citizens, has been leaked online and is available basically for sale on the dark web. Now, according to the investigative report by the Economic Times, troves of personal information includes basically phone numbers, email addresses, user IDs, all this kind of stuff. And so if you're using Truecaller and they are a worldwide company, though they're based in India, heads up to you. Moving on, we are going to be talking about the University of San Diego, UCSD. Now, they are dragging their feet when it comes to informing women with HIV and AIDS in a study. So basically, these women were in an HIV/AIDS study that their confidential information was exposed, according to an investigation by iNews Source. Now, study leaders basically informed the officials from the university of this breach in October. But since then, according to iNews Source, this issue has been bounced around between review boards and lawyers and kind of placed into a holding pattern for guidance as to when to break the news for participants. So as of 2 weeks ago, UCSD had still not informed the women in this study, but promised to do so once it confirmed that Christie's Place, which was the organization that got them breached, has returned the files to the university and destroyed its own copies. And if anybody from, in terms of officials, are listening from the University of California, San Diego, the time to tell people is immediately. This is a very serious issue that we have with data breach disclosures. We don't know, and we can't take proactive steps individually to defend ourselves, to get identity monitoring, to mitigate the damage, especially when you're talking about something as deeply personal and terrifying as publicly disclosing that you have AIDS or HIV, for God's sake. So please, if you are a member of the UCSD, please, please, please tell the women in this study about this. And finally, we're going to be talking about AT&T. Now, a week ago Monday, AT&T warned visitors on their website of a quote-unquote data incident with basically a banner at the top of their homepage. And according to people who visited the page at the time, it basically said this: you may be affected by a recent AT&T data incident. Check if your accounts are impacted. Now, the banner linked to a confusing and incomplete FAQ, basically like a question page, which contained a link to a site where users could enter their phone number to check if they were affected. And so researchers tested this tool when it was open with basically an AT&T account, and they found that they were not affected. Now, an AT&T spokesperson came out and told Motherboard by Vice News in an email that there was no reason to worry, that this was all a mistake. And I quote from that article: "We apologize for any confusion or inconvenience. A message was inadvertently posted to our website during routine testing. The message was quickly taken down." And so basically, heads up to you, if you're an AT&T customer and you saw a data breach, AT&T is actually saying that that banner, that notification, was part of a test and it was not real and all of that. And hopefully AT&T is being honest about that. And so those are your breaches of the week. We went for just over 20 minutes on this, and it is absolutely nuts. And I cut this down too, because this would have been about 35 minutes. But some of the other breaches I'll be talking about in my next show 2 weeks from now. So wow. I mean, this is where we're facing, and hopefully you are not affected, but this is going to continue to just grow and grow and grow. And those are your breaches of the last couple of weeks. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin. And this week's deep dive is, should we be breaking up big tech? Basically, due to having a monopoly. Now, if we're looking at the 2020 presidential race, we have a lot of different candidates on the Democrat side more than the Republican side, because there's only, I think, President Trump and Bill Weld on the Republican side. But Democrats, including Senator Elizabeth Warren, have been calling to break up big tech due to basically being a monopoly. Now, if we were looking at this, technology companies based in Seattle or Silicon Valley now account for 5 out of 5 of the most valuable companies in America. And that basically has gotten a lot of commentary in the past year or so from people like Tim Wu, who is a law professor at Columbia, or economists like Kenneth Rogoff of Harvard, arguing that big tech has in some way gotten too big. Now, this is not the first time that we've seen calls for this before. One of these five, Microsoft, was a subject of considerable antitrust scrutiny in the late 1990s, and obviously they did not get broken up. And they are not under scrutiny right now at the moment, but we're going to be talking about three of the other five: Google, Facebook, and Amazon, because these are companies that have essentially locked down a vertical. But it's very hard to pin something like a monopoly on them. And so we're going to walk through some of the stuff that's happening. And what prompted this is recently, about 2 days ago or so, the Wall Street Journal came out with a story on Alphabet, who is the parent of Google, and the Department of Justice going after them. Now, the U.S. Department of Justice is gearing up to investigate antitrust violations basically by Google, and this focuses largely on the company's search practices. Now, this is according to the Friday report from a few days ago when I recorded this of the Wall Street Journal. Now, if the Department of Justice proceeds with this investigation, it will mark the first time or the first major antitrust case against a big tech company since President Trump took office. This would be the first. Now, it's unclear whether the Department of Justice has contacted Google, and a spokesperson for the DOJ declined to comment. Now, the FTC and Google did not also immediately respond to requests, and that is coming from Fox Business, the business side of Fox News as well. So a lot of people are looking into this right now, and we're going to see where this goes. Now, Google has faced questions about potential antitrust violations in the past. The Federal Trade Commission, which shares antitrust authority with the Department of Justice, previously conducted a broad investigation of Google looking into its advertising practices and influence in the online ad industry, but closed that investigation in 2013 when the company agreed to voluntarily change some of its business practices, including agreeing to give online advertisers more flexibility to manage ad campaigns on Google as well as its rival ad platforms. And so there we go. Now, in March, this was a couple of months ago, the European Union regulators fined Google $1.7 billion for abusing its market dominance by preventing its rivals from placing online search advertisers. And so in total, the EU has fined Google about $10 billion in the last couple of years on this. So that is, in a nutshell, what Google is. And if you look at it, they are hands down the largest search engine on the planet. Look at any other search engine, pretty much in the United States, North America, Europe, and all of that. And Google dwarfs all of them, probably all of them combined. Some of their closest competitors, Yahoo, don't even dent the search numbers or users or traffic that Google gets on a daily basis. They're absolutely huge, and with no real natural competitors in free markets like the United States and Europe and South America and other places as well, excluding China, which is literally their own thing in this, Google literally does have a monopoly on search. And while you have other options that you can go to, a lot of people don't know what those other options are. Some people have heard of, you know, Yahoo and all that. Microsoft has Bing. I think 6 people use that. But there are other ones that are more private and anti-tracking because Google literally is data mining you as you're searching. So have you ever heard of DuckDuckGo? A lot of people have not. That's a private search engine that will give you results similar to what a Google does, but they don't put you in a filter bubble. And so here we are. But DuckDuckGo, I mean, has all of 10 users compared to the billions of what Google has. And so who's their natural competitor? I think that's interesting. And I think that whatever the DOJ looks at, I'm curious to see what the end result of that is. And then what does a breakup of Google look like? Google basically converted into Alphabet, or rather the founders of Google created Alphabet to try to get around monopoly issues. And so basically Alphabet, they want a company from A to Z. And so they own a lot of different companies in a lot of different verticals. They also own Boston Dynamics, which builds robots, you know, and some others for, you know, driverless cars and other logistics companies and all of this. And they put that intentionally outside of Google to avoid the appearance of having a monopoly in any one vertical, yet here we are. And so I'm very curious to see this because literally nobody can touch Google when it comes to search engine performance and just the traffic they get per month. Moving on, let's talk about Facebook. Now, I find this to be rather interesting as well because when we're looking at the competitors for Facebook, they have no natural competitors. There are other social media platforms out there, but they don't do everything that Facebook does in its entirety. So you can look at Twitter, which is technically considered microblogging. You got, I think, 240 characters now, you know, to go out on Twitter and talk about things, but it doesn't give you the same kind of digital living room, if you will, or digital town hall that Facebook likes to call itself in that sense. You have Twitter followers, you can lock your Twitter down, but you can't write long soliloquies or put in, you know, huge videos and all that. There's a lot of caps on these things. They don't have a natural competitor that is as well known that people can switch to very easily. And if you look at this, on the top 10 downloaded apps and top 10 social media platforms on the planet, they own four of them. So this is purely by user count. Facebook has 2.32 billion followers. They also own WhatsApp, which is a messaging service that's supposed to be secure, and what we're finding out is that it's not as secure as we thought it was. WhatsApp has 1.6 billion users around the planet. Facebook Messenger comes in at number 4 on the overall top 10. WhatsApp was number 3. So we have 1, 3, and 4. Facebook Messenger is 1.3 billion. Instagram at number 6 is 1 billion. And so when you are looking at all of those together, they own 40% of the top 10 platforms. The others are like YouTube and all of that. And so they don't have any real natural competitors. And I've done video and audio and all of this on all the privacy violations and data mining and everything that they've done, very similar to what Google has. And now Google has a strong push for privacy, which, you know, a lot of us are you know, looking at very, very leerily, I guess, if that's an actual word. I'm leery of it, you know, as any claims that Facebook makes as well, you know, to now actually care about privacy when we have heard that they have just been blatantly lying to us, you know, for the longest time. And so Facebook has no real natural competitors. Now, moving on, let's talk about Amazon real quick, because I think this is absolutely fascinating. This comes from a Wall Street Journal article, and this actually blew my mind. I'm a nerd. I'm in cybersecurity. I love technology, and I did not know, you know, just thinking about it, all the things that Amazon does, all the things that they are doing to basically become a one-stop shop for virtually anything in your life and business life and government life and everything. So listen to this list that the Wall Street Journal put together. They made one-day shipping for tens of millions of items an industry standard. That alone puts them above a lot of potential competitors in that one very specific vertical. They are the global leader in cloud computing services, which is true. Amazon Web Services is utterly massive, and they have competitors out there that are pretty large. So there's Microsoft Azure, IBM has their cloud, formerly called SoftLayer, you know, and others do as well. But they are. Just Amazon is huge. It's Amazon Web Services is massive. They own Whole Foods grocery stores, and they're building a second chain. So they are now diving into the supermarket vertical. They help police departments identify criminals via facial recognition, their facial recognition system, and they are working to try to sell that to pretty much every law enforcement on the planet, even though there are serious, serious flaws with that. I've used this example before, but the ACLU took their facial recognition system, that's recognition with a K, and ran it against all 535 members of the U.S. Congress against a criminal mugshot database that didn't include their faces, and recognition identified 28 members of Congress as criminals. That's a problem. It has serious flaws, and if we're letting law enforcement use this, that's a very, very, very serious issue because of false identification. I talked about that earlier in the news segment as well. So they're also building their own air cargo fleet, you know, because they are shipping and moving so much stuff that they need their own air cargo fleet. They can't rely on anybody else for that, even though I'm sure they have relationships with the major carriers, but now they're going to compete in that. They have an $11 billion a year advertising business. That is one thing that possibly goes head to head with Google and Facebook, who also have extremely large advertising businesses as well. They're working on a plan to give everybody on Earth internet from space, meaning low orbit satellite communication system that would literally blanket the entire Earth with internet connections. They have basically put in 1 in 10% of all U.S. homes now have an Amazon Echo or some other Amazon device that has a microphone built into it that is always on. And I've done videos, I've mentioned this before, where, you know, I've proven that the Amazon Echo has to be on and listening to everything that you say in order to hear its keywords to get moving. They built an Oscar-winning film and TV studio literally from scratch. That is Amazon Prime, and they are now winning Academy Awards. They have pumped a ton of money into buying shows, developing new content, you know, producing movies and everything like that. That is a very serious issue. They've got Netflix as somewhat of a competitor, but what most people don't know is that Netflix is actually hosted by Amazon. Think about that for a second. Netflix's infrastructure is hosted on Amazon Web Services, which is the largest infrastructure on the planet. And when Netflix is somewhere between 1/4 to 1/3 of all bandwidth in the United States, that is bandwidth that is going to Amazon. That's got to be the single largest bill that Netflix pays is to Amazon, and probably one of the largest bills that Amazon collects has got to be from Netflix. And so is it really a competitor? Are we just simply waiting for Amazon to pull the trigger and buy Netflix and incorporate it into its systems because it's already literally being hosted by them? That's crazy. Now, they are competing directly against the following companies in these verticals, and they are doing it incredibly well. They are competing against UPS, FedEx, Google, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, IBM, the entire book publishing industry, Netflix, HBO, Disney, Walmart, Target, Costco, Kroger, CVS, Walgreens, and countless different startups that if they have an innovative product, Amazon will probably simply buy and fold it into their ever-growing, expanding services, offerings, and products. And that is the backdrop that we have right now. You know, we go shopping for things, and if we don't find it in a store, we're going to go on Amazon. And many of us don't even bother to go out to the stores anymore. Like, so for example, I just bought a new watch for myself, like a smartwatch, you know, for like step counting and exercise and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted a different band for it. And I basically went to Amazon and I looked it up, and they had the bands, and they were cheaper than the maker of the watch's website was. And the maker of the watch, in this case it's Garmin, they basically have a Garmin store on Amazon that I can buy it from for like $10 cheaper with free shipping because I'm an Amazon Prime member, and on and on and on. And so how is a big box retail store going to compete with that? I got it literally less than 24 hours later when some guy in his car pulled up to my house. He had an Uber sticker on, but Amazon has now employed this individual to basically deliver packages from them. They are building this massive delivery fleet, and they're able to circumvent their competitors like FedEx and UPS and be accurate with delivery times. This is huge. You can't think of any vertical right now on the moment that these companies aren't competing into. Google has been pushing into healthcare. Amazon has been pushing into healthcare. Facebook is now going after LinkedIn. They are trying to create a more business side to Facebook. They're also going after dating apps as well to try to create like a dating thing, which I think they've had before, but they've never really pushed it. And so you've got these companies that really have no natural competitors, or they're consuming huge percentages of the market verticals that they're in. And at what point do we say, you know, enough is enough, or this is too bad, or this is too big, or we can't handle this anymore in terms of just lack of innovation, lack of competing. You know, look at Amazon. I mean, I literally could probably live my entire life ordering everything from Amazon, never having to set foot in another store again, whether it's food or clothes. I could probably buy a car off of Amazon if I wanted to, not that I would, but you know what I mean? And that is very, very serious. How do we, what are we going to do with this? How are we going to compete with this? Is this fine? Maybe this is just the free market that another Amazon is going to come around and, you know, start killing Amazon, or, you know, maybe they've taken on too much. And instead of actually excelling in every vertical, at some point their logistics is going to fall down and they're going to stink at every vertical, and which means their natural competitors are competing with them. And so Amazon can look at this and say, well, you know, we don't really have many competitors, but the competitors that we do in the verticals, they're competing with us rather well. The book publishing industry, you know, they've got their own guidelines. You can go buy from them. You don't have to buy from us. You can walk into a Barnes and Noble or any other bookstore around. You don't have to use us for any kind of shipping. Go use UPS and FedEx. They're both big and large companies as well. You don't have to watch Amazon Prime videos. Go get Netflix. Go watch HBO or Disney. You know, they're competing with Walmart as in terms of logistics and employment, as well as just selling stuff. Walmart has been, while Walmart is big and they have a large online presence, they're nowhere near what Amazon is. You know, Target, Costco, CVS, Walgreens, you know, take your pick. And so that is a huge, huge thing that I think we really need to understand. I think we really need to discuss on a more deeply level. And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time. And I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick A ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.